Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Gestalten Podcast. My name is Eric.
And my name is Martin.
And we are coming to you from different parts of the world, but still in Europe. Well, for the moment, anyway.
Yeah, big travels coming up in November, but I'm in Munich, you're in London. And for everybody who didn't really listen to our last episode, I would say, we were in Paris. Yep. And just to kind of, listen to obviously the big episode that we did, but just in a couple of words, how would you summarize it now with, a few weeks in between?
Well, I still think that it was a generally pretty lackluster show, even, if we look at it from the French manufacturers' perspectives, there wasn't all that much newness, which is a shame. Generally, from the French manufacturers always make a big deal about Paris, just like in Frankfurt, the German manufacturers always come up guns blazing. So it was, a general reflection of what's going on in terms of auto shows and showing that it's no longer really at the top of automakers' priority list for a number of reasons, expense and, battling for, competitive competition against competition in the different segments. So it's, nowadays you can do a lot of things on social media. You can make a huge splash at private events. So, really the motor show is, and this was really a reflection in Paris. It's kind of past its heyday, unless people really start to, really shake things up. In terms of new product, though, I mean, like you said, we did cover this in pretty much great detail the last time when we were at the show itself, and having been there walking around for a few days, we did see new products being unveiled, not as many as we would have liked, but they were generally, some good things as well as some things which, are probably going to be quickly forgotten.
Yeah, and I think I just want to jump onto one thing when you mentioned the motor shows and their existence and stuff like that. The funny thing is, obviously, we went, I think we have to specify this, we went for the press days. So we actually were very, very fortunate to really look at the cars in detail. There weren't that many people around, but, and we were quite, we had like quite a lot of criticism on the whole show, but at the same time, as we read from the media, there were over a million people going to the show. So it's maybe it's turning more towards a, really like a customer event rather than just kind of this entertainment event where we see something new and we see exciting stuff and like exciting new cars and concepts and stuff like that. Just to pretty much a bunch of, almost like a retailing mall. You go there, you have a look at the cars, you check them out. There's some kind of special edition that you can see in any kind of big mall in the US as well, for example. And then you go home again. So it becomes more this kind of, I have a look at what I like, what I maybe don't like. And obviously for us, the excitement about the new cars, that has just gone away. And I think this was, what for me personally has come very, very much into play over the past couple of weeks was that I just wasn't excited about it anymore. It's just like, if I wanted to buy a car, this is a cool place because I can see all the different ones. But as someone who's very much invested in our little bubble of the car design world, it was probably completely, I don't want to say it was wasting time because we had a good time, met a lot of people, saw a lot of familiar faces, but it's not as exciting anymore, in terms of new developments as it was a few years ago and stuff like that. And I think this is a little bit of a takeaway, is that we're going more towards this consumerism show, or like even back to that, and just like people choosing which kind of cars they like and admiring a little bit of those kind of concepts, but more about what kind of car do I want to buy rather than just the pure admiring factor of everything.
I don't think that you can actually buy a car in Paris. Like Geneva, people go there and with their checkbooks, that's a show where people actually go there instead of going to the dealership. They can look at cars side by side, especially supercars, and compare them and whip out their checkbooks and buy them on the spot. I don't know if that's the case in Paris. What generally disappointed me was, there is a lack of investment, it seems, from automakers and a lack of involvement as well from automakers. Not only were there 14 manufacturers that should have been there, Opel should have been there showing that new GTX experimental, in my view, they missed out. So, Ford wasn't there. I mean, these are big players. So when you think that these guys aren't attending motor shows, the traditional motor shows anymore, instead, Opel is making a huge splash in places like Instagram and stuff like, showing off their new concepts. It's definitely a change. It's winds of change right now in terms of how vehicles get promoted. Now, the other thing that struck me was the fact that, the show stands were nowhere near what they were in Frankfurt just a year ago. Was a noticeable lack of investment, and it's just a shame from that perspective. There was also, from a design perspective, some new cars that were revealed that, we spoke about, like BMW 3 Series, for example, which is a huge, a mainstay for the brand, something that's been around for, decades, that's been a very, very important car, and it just didn't resonate at all with me or with most of the general public what I've seen and read from the general media. So in terms of that show, it was a shame. But since then, we have been super busy, of course, in our day-to-day activities. There's loads of things going on in the car design industry, in the car design world at the moment. Lots of studios popping up and hiring, of course, talent. Now it's interesting because, there's a lot of Chinese car makers are opening studios outside of China, which we have also discussed in a previous podcast. Yeah. And it seems like some designers, there's one senior level designer that published something that was interesting to me, saying, talent is all going over to China. We're all going to be left with nothing over here in Europe, which is where he's based. Now, there's obviously a number of reasons as to why that's happening. The Chinese are going after what it is that they want, and they're putting together some offers where, some people are really tempted by financial gain in that regard. But also, there is a large amount of opportunity going on in terms of nascent car companies, and indeed car companies that have existed for a good while by Chinese terms and that are seeking to reinvent themselves. And, if they come at it with a different kind of viewpoint, I think there's a huge potential there for the Chinese to be leading. I mean, they've been leapfrogging in terms of all sorts of aspects of the automotive industry, all sorts of aspects of production. I mean, the Chinese have really become a force from an automotive industry perspective, and in a very short time. And they keep doing that. So it's in other industries as well. So it's really interesting to see what it is that's going to happen with the Chinese car makers in terms of design in the near future. Are they going to start placing more emphasis on design, which is really the way that I think things should be going?
Yeah, and also, I mean, it was really interesting to see, and coming back a little bit to the Paris topic, but really moving a little bit forward to that. And we had GAC at the Paris Motor Show, and they were pretty much surrounded by Mercedes and BMW. Yeah, they were so in the same hall. It was actually really, really funny to see, because the quality of the Chinese cars, or at least the cars that GAC showed, were nowhere near a BMW or a Mercedes. And I think it was really, really good for GAC to be part of that kind of group of companies, because in terms of reputation and stuff like that, it's of course a very, very good kind of a situation. But if we really looked into the gaps and stuff like that, that are between the fenders and the doors and all these kind of things, we were playing around a little bit with that, and sometimes we were almost like able to put a hand in there. So I do very, very much agree in terms of all these, design moves and new studios and stuff like that. But also, if you want to compete with those kind of cars, and, you know, like we saw like the Silver Era, which was, you know, plain perfect in terms of what, you know, Mercedes could have done as a show car. There was nothing wrong with that model. You know, it was literally absolutely perfect. They had the EQC there, which is obviously a production car and stuff like that. But compared to the Chinese and GAC in that particular, and I don't want to criticize them too much, but, you know, if you want to go in between those kind of guys, you're going to be compared on the premium level. They just didn't keep up. You know, quite forwardly speaking in that sense. So that's the interesting point, because I think we have to see, like, China is a different kind of level. China compared to European companies, you know, let's say American companies, probably the only one who can really compete at the moment from my perspective is Geely. In that regards, the rest still need to keep up. And we saw that to a certain degree in Paris as well. But, you know, they are hiring, as you've mentioned, there's a lot of, you know, movement in there with all those companies, but you know, they're not 100% ready yet to compete with really the big dogs when it comes to premium level. I think when it comes to mid-sector, that's absolutely fine, but premium, not quite there yet. Going to be interesting to see how this is going to develop. But I want to do just something very, very quickly, because obviously, you know, I don't want to miss out on one of our favorite kind of parts of the show, which is always about talking about the new cars. And we will come back to the ideas of designers a little bit later on with a different topic, but not really much to discuss after the Paris show, but we need to discuss the BMW X5 and we need to discuss the BMW X7. Because it is another BMW. We were extremely, you know, we were hard critics on that one quite recently. And we said there were probably a few problems going on at BMW. But what do we think about them at this moment in time?
Well, you know, I mean, I'm not a big fan of SUVs. So you've just listed two SUVs. And that, unfortunately, is the way that the entire car market seems to be going. People, car buyers, are generally really enamored by the... Perhaps it's the practicality aspect, the fact that you sit up higher. I mean, there's a number of attributes to SUVs which make them attractive to individual buyers. Personally, from a design perspective, you know, the X5 hasn't changed all that much, I would say, from the predecessor. Now, where it's changed the most is in the front face and its rear. And the rear treatment is not particularly appealing to me. I see a lot of automakers now going to these really long, you know, stretched out lamps in order to really just make the car appear wider and lower. It decreases the kind of visual height of the vehicle. But the thing is, for me, it's important to note that every BMW also kind of, not only does it get a little bit bigger, but it also gains vast amounts of technology. And that's the way that things are going these days. It's technology, technology, technology. So in terms of technology, if we just look at, for example, the headlamps, which have been in their, you know, in their treatment changed also from what was, you know, really a very identifiable character, the double round headlamps of BMW, they've kind of morphed into something different. And they're also like really embedded with technology. So with that technology, you could actually make the headlamps smaller. You could make the tail lamps smaller. And to me, proportionally, that would work a lot better. The technology's there. We will see it happen. I always think that if the headlamps are actually smaller than the wheels, the car tends to look better. And I don't know, you know, yeah. if I'm kind of unique in that thought, but companies aren't taking advantage of the technology that's there. They're just putting it on the vehicle, but not in applications which I deem to be forward thinking. And that, you know, kind of from an exterior design perspective, kind of lets me down a little bit. Interior wise, of course, you know, there's lots to like on this new X5, mainly because, you know, it's got all of these screens, you know, and screens, and everything digital, you know, and it's, I mean, it's a nice evolution, I would say, of what it was that the X5 was and is becoming. But again, you know, I just can't get past certain aspects of the vehicle. It's a shame, and I'm sure it will be a success just because the X5 always has been. It's a brilliant car to drive. So, yeah. You know, it's, I'm sure it will find buyers that are interested in, again, owning an SUV, owning something that is, you know, kind of gives them that kind of sense of security and that authority. I mean, I do like the way that the IP is tiered up. I like the way that the, you know, the BMW has this kind of angular treatment for the air vents in the front, which is, you know, always kind of canted a little bit towards the driver and giving them that kind of driver-centric authority and appeal. And it's also got some neat bits along with, you know, the color and trim. Some of the materials that are being used also are interesting. But, you know, it's... I don't know. I'm not a big fan of SUVs, and regardless of their practicality, I just I'm kind of tired of the whole SUV thing.
Yeah, and I think, you know, especially from exterior, I do agree on the interior. I mean, I think we can kind of say in general that the interior for most companies is making a lot of steps forward, which I think is a very, very positive thing. We're all quite happy about that as well. So that's all really, 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 really cool. My main problem about BMW at the moment with the X5 and the X7 is just there's nothing that makes it recognizably a BMW. Especially from the side view. You know, if you see that, it's like, well, it could be any kind of car. There's nothing that is specifically BMW. You know, I'm kind of okay with the rear. I can live with that. I don't necessarily like it, but I'm not angry with it. But it's just that also, like, you know, they're making the grille bigger and bigger and bigger. And, you know, I remember when we were talking about the Aston Martin DBS, the new one, and I was like, man, this is like a whale shark. You know, this is like, it seems like it wants to eat you pretty much. And it's the same thing like with BMW. It's just like, what do you want to do with, like, you know, those big kidneys nowadays? You know, they have become this kind of graphic element that is just too much for me personally. And this is just what makes, you know, the thing for me not really attractive in that sense. Interior, a different level. But like I said, there's nothing recognizable about this car anymore. Obviously, like with the kidneys, it's a little bit an exception. That's the BMW face. But if I see it from the side, man, it could be anything, you know. And coming back, obviously, then to the Chinese guys, this is what the Chinese guys are doing really, really well nowadays is, you know, the quality is okay. It's not great. Cannot compete with anything like BMW. But, you know, some of them are really recognizable. And, you know, I'm a little bit worried at the moment. I'm not going to lie. The BMW cannot keep that up. And they're just going to, you know, be the, you know, average kind of car that nobody can differentiate anymore. So let's hope this is not going to happen from that perspective. But I would like to actually move on from, you know, us bashing BMW almost every single episode.
I mean, if there is one nice thing that we can say about the X7, I think, you know, it stays very close to the concept, which was done, what do we see back in 2017? You know, the what was it called? The iPerformance, rather, concept of X7 iPerformance. So I think, you know, from where it was, you know, to where it's gotten, I do give BMW some credit. You know, and again, you know, BMW has kind of been doing this for a little while now where, you know, they don't show vehicles like concept cars that aren't going to translate into reality. You're never really left with all that much thinking. If it is a pure like concept blue sky thing, they call them visions. Otherwise, they don't call them concepts. The concepts are really something that's kind of you know, inches away from production. So that's kind of good. The visions is something that, you know, is obviously eye catching. It's good to see what designers are thinking about in respective companies. But again, you know, concept cars are just a toe in the water for what they could potentially be doing, perhaps somehow down the line, and how customers are going to react to that. And it's not always good, and it's certainly not always production feasible. And you know, it is nice to dream. There is no question. But it's also nice to see things that are going to translate into a production reality. So from that perspective, you know, BMW does a good job. But again, they can't show all their cards, right?
Of course. But you're talking about something very interesting here. We're talking about concept to production. And we actually decided we wanted to talk about something that we are quite passionate about. We do, to a certain kind of degree, disagree about as well. And we went to the Paris, you know, the Paris Motor Show Designers Night, and we had actually a lot of people coming up to us. And we first of all want to say thank you for all the positive comments on the podcast, and that so many people like it. We also obviously want to say a quick thank you for, you know, the people who organized the Designers Night. Was a really, really fun event, and we got to, you know, meet a lot of people that we knew already, some people that we didn't know. But we had a couple of discussions actually about design schools and about portfolios and about, you know, being a student. What is it that you, you know, what are you expected to do as a student, and, you know, what is it that you're expected to know and you to be able to do when you finish, you know, university and actually go into a job. So the idea was, we're just going to talk a little bit about design schools. We're going to talk a little bit about, you know, some really cool things. We're going to talk about some criticism that comes out of the real world that are, you know, very, very often not really taught or talked about in the schools. And try to give some kind of tips to maybe, you know, some of the students listening to this podcast. And obviously for everybody who's not a student anymore, who might, you know, outgrown the university system already, to also kind of give us a little bit of feedback if you think in a very, very similar kind of way. But so let's jump right into it. Eric, you go to a lot of those, you know, graduate shows, and like, you know, you know a lot of the professors, you know a lot of the schools and stuff like that. What do you feel about, you know, let's say in particular transportation design schools at the moment? What is your personal feeling? Where is the world of university teaching when it comes to transportation design going?
Well, yes, I do definitely go to a lot of design shows, a lot of degree shows, and, you know, I mean, from generally speaking, you know, there are some schools that are just, you know, head and shoulders above the rest. You know, some schools are more than happy to take your money without actually providing you with the necessary tools that you need to prepare for a career in automotive design. Now, you know, as a recruiter, I see things a lot more, you know, portfolios coming across through the inbox and on my desk that's basically aren't aligned with what it is that these guys are looking to do. I think from a design school perspective, if the school is good enough, meaning that if students, and I'm not saying that, you know, certainly not on the master's level courses and all of that, that students need hand-holding, but general guidance as to what it is that people are expecting. And some schools do this way better than others in terms of preparing students, getting them into internships, really providing, doing the legwork that's necessary in order to make sure that these guys, after spending however long in a design program or however much money, are going to be really able to find a full-time gig once they graduate. Now, of course, a lot of it is up to the student themselves, and the students really need to put in the time. It's not, look, nowadays, you know, it's not enough just to do a pretty sketch. You actually need to have some thinking, some thought process behind what it is that you're doing. And I think if students go in there and they're not motivated enough, and they don't have somebody that's going, you know, some of these bigger schools have, you know, 100 students graduating per year. There's no way that a design professor, regardless of how good they are, is going to be able to follow and guide that student. Now, if they take the initiative and go out and do things, do the necessary research, find out what some of the problems are that the industry is facing, find perhaps some appealing solutions for some of these issues of mobility that we currently have, you know, in future mobility, it's not just, I mean, I read something recently, and you were talking about, you know, the show being in Paris being positively attended, and there's a sharp decline in private car ownership across all of Europe, and Europe is a particular example because, you know, the cities and the way that they're laid out don't really need cars congesting the streets. So, you know, when students take the time to kind of get out of their comfort zone a little bit and start looking at what is really happening in these cities. How are people getting around? And, you know, they might come up with some interesting mobility concepts, which would then be extremely appealing for a prospective employer. But I think, you know, again, generally speaking, I'm not going to speak for one school over another, but there are some schools that really, instead of just coming in and saying, yeah, we offer a design program, they tailor the program to suit the student's qualities and ability. And what I mean is, they'll offer dedicated interior programs, or they'll offer a clay module. Perhaps, you know, that's the way that designers need to go. And so maybe not everyone is cut out to be a designer. Maybe you'd be better suited to be a clay modeler. So I think, you know, in terms of that, there is a lot of potential for design schools to kind of expand, start offering perhaps some really dedicated UI or, you know, programs, or at least some modules where students are, you know, really working to, you know, with graphics and things instead of just, you know, drawing a car exterior for 4 years. It's like, you know, like let's kind of move the game on a little bit. Let's give these guys a bit more ammunition for when they go out into the real world so that they are more appealing to prospective employers and have a more well-rounded education. You know, if all you do is come out of school with a couple of quick projects that you've done and little like sponsored things or whatever, and then maybe you've had an internship in one place that, you know, lasted 6 months, I don't know. It's just not, you know, it's not giving them, I think, enough artillery. And that's, you know, I mean, I keep using this war terminology, like bullets and stuff, but I mean, it's a hard world out there. There is a huge amount of competition. There's a lot of designers, way more than are getting hired. Yeah. And people, designers, young guys and girls really need to realize that, hey, you know, I need to be at the top of my game if I'm going to get anywhere in this highly competitive industry.
And to jump onto that, I think it comes a little bit as a definition of a designer. This is very much my personal view, but, you know, a lot of these design schools are actually art schools. Yeah, so we're talking about artistry. We're talking about, you know, it's not necessarily something about a product in that kind of regard. I think this is the very, very big difference to, let's say, industrial design. Transportation design is still very, very often seen as an art rather than, you know, a traditional kind of product or industrial design. And let's be very, very honest, it's not. Yeah. When, you know, everybody who does that job, of course they say, oh, I want to be, you know, I want to do some really, really cool things. You know, I want to do, an Anton Chermenkov Renault, like future formula car. And I want to do like, you know, a Silver Arrow from Mercedes that we've discussed earlier and stuff like that. So that's all nice, you know, but. Excuse me, but you're not working in this industry to have nice concept cars. You're working in this industry to bring cars onto the road. Yeah, if that is then, and that doesn't change for future mobility. Yeah, it doesn't then matter if it's, you know, an Uber or Lilium kind of style, you know, plain taxi. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, it's just a kind of a shared vehicle and stuff like that. Everybody who is designing something, I think, has the ability that they can put it onto the market. And then it doesn't matter nowadays anymore if it's leased or rented or bought in that kind of sense. And I think a lot of schools, they don't teach the people that, yeah, and especially the students. You know, a lot of the conversations we have with the people from the industry is that a lot of the students, they have very little idea about the engineering behind design. Yeah, why is it important? There's a certain kind of economic factor. So if I change a DLO a few millimeters, you know, what would that cost in terms of tooling and stuff like that? And I don't want to say that, you know, the transportation design or mobility design needs to become way more like that. So in terms of numbers and stuff like that. But I think students nowadays, they should have a certain kind of interest and a certain kind of, you know, push from themselves to know and the willingness to understand what they want to do, and you know, how can I really get this all done? And this is not really taught in the schools. The students have to do it themselves, and of course, it's always a little bit cooler to draw some cool sketches and stuff like that. But you know, we've been to shows, and I think this shows a little bit the kind of, you know, artistry about it, where the people didn't do their own 3D models. You know, they send their models then off to be 3D printed rather than do their own clay model and try things out. And this is not real car design. You know, real car design, you learn. You learn about everything. And and that is a problem, I think, that has to do with a certain kind of degree, maybe with the teachers. It always is, you know, it's always, of course, with the students as well. You need to be willing to learn about those kind of things. But and I don't want to be overly critical, because the creative part is still very important, especially in the beginning. But the wish to really understand how my, you know, project is getting into production, or like, you know, onto the street, I don't really see that. And that's actually a sad part, because the one of the integral parts of showing your project to the public, and ideally having it on the road and, like, you know, traveling the world because your, I don't know, your new car is, you know, it's been presented in 15 different countries. That should be the goal. You know, that's how you get, like, you know, the kind of credibility, not just because you do a nice little show car that, you know, people will forget about in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I think ultimately, to go back to what you were saying earlier, in terms of the designers that choose to send their models off. Now, a lot of the time, you know, the professors will tell students it doesn't matter if you're doing a model or not. Sometimes they want designers to do, you know, the students to do a scale model for their projects. And in some schools, you know, the student would have interns, say, at Mercedes-Benz, and then Mercedes will spend a bunch of money to do their model, and sure, the guy will sure not have gone to Mercedes, and therefore we won't have the $20,000 model on show. So it's, you know, there's bits there. Now, I think, you know, in terms of, you know, doing all of the data, and then shipping all of that over to some guy in China who's going to do your model is shortchanging you in the long run. Because, you know, as you mentioned, it's not just about doing a pretty sketch. It's not just about art. It's about working with other members of a vast team that are going to come together and put together a vehicle, right? So you need to work with alias modelers. You need to work with engineers in some respects if you're going into production. Now, you know, maybe a junior designer isn't going to do that. They'll learn a lot on the job, of course, but I think it would give certain design, and some schools do this, you know, package, for example, you know, learn, have a few more kind of alias or VRED courses or something, where, you know, designers are actually really learning the tools that they're going to be needing when they're in this studio. So they have a leg up a little bit on, you know, they're not starting from scratch. They need to know a little bit more about the process, I think. And, you know, of course, like I said, you learn a lot on the job. But when you send, for example, a clay model off, one, you're losing about a month or more, you know, 2 months of actual designing, because you have to get all of that data in ready in order to ship it out, and then get it shipped back as a final model that you can display. And it cuts both ways, right? Because the guy that doesn't have the nice model on show isn't going to get approached by someone, perhaps from a hiring manager from an automotive company that are there at these shows. You know, that's why they have these shows. So designers can, you know, that are employed at these companies, hiring managers can come in and take a look at what the students have done. But at the same time, if it isn't their work, is that really their work? So it's like, you know, I have issues also with collaborative problems, projects rather, that creates a lot of problems because you can, of course, you will have to collaborate with other designers. It's not going to be just you. It's never just you. But
yeah,
when you come across a portfolio, and I think we should actually move into that now, and you see a portfolio with the same project across like four different portfolios, and you're like, which, you know, what part did you actually do? You know, were you at home watching Netflix while, you know, Alessandro did the entire exterior design. Like, you don't know, because the guy whose portfolio you're looking at is not named Alessandro. So anyway, I mean, it's just there's certain things with, you know, the way that projects are presented, and then the way that students in turn, when it's time to go out and get a job, put a portfolio together, could do with some vast improvement.
100% agree. And I think to give a little bit, we don't just want to criticize, obviously, you know, we see certain kind of things, and we get a lot of feedback from the industry. And when we talk about portfolios, always be aware that there's a lot of people who are as good in terms of sketching, you know, in terms of using Photoshop and stuff like that, you know, as pretty much you can think of. I mean, you know, the general kind of quality of people that are studying transportation design, they know how to use Photoshop, you know, and the top is getting really, really tiny, to be very, very honest. But what we can definitely say when it comes to the portfolio is, look, do something that is original. Look, every portfolio we see has a Lamborghini or a Porsche in there. Yeah. So when you do something like that, always make sure that it's really something challenging. And I'm not saying challenging in terms of a project, but maybe challenging the design idea behind it, challenging the kind of brand behind it a little bit, you know, but something that is different. Because I know how you guys all think, you know, like you want to do the coolest things and supercars and stuff like that. And everybody wants to be the next Sasha Selipanov and, you know, doing a Bugatti and Lamborghinis and Genesis and whatever not. But that's difficult because there's a lot of competition. Yeah. So when it comes to the portfolio, show a little bit how you're different. You know, so we had one guy just a few years ago who actually had a project which was pretty much like an autonomous casket. Super strange, but like the people remembered that it was very well executed and stuff like that, but it was a certain kind of idea, like a, you know, end of life cycle and all these kind of things that was part of mobility, and that was super new, you know. That obviously is something that, you know, probably put him into like a yes or no kind of direction, so either people liked it or they didn't like it, but that was something quite original, you know. And also show a little bit what else you can do apart from sketching. You know, we talked about working about, you know, with Alias, for example, with VRED, nowadays virtual reality when it comes to Unity and all these kind of things, you know, are becoming of interest. So when you do a portfolio, you know, for a 3D model, for example, it's very difficult then to like to judge the 3D model just on pictures. So why don't you just, you know, put the wire file when you do it on Alias or like in Polygots and stuff like that, you know, put it into your portfolio, like, you know, send it out with the people so they can have a look at it and see what they can do. You know, those kind of extra skills is what's going to set you apart nowadays, rather than just the sketching, because I think, you know, we've seen this quite regularly. The sketching quality is super high, and we're more and more looking into what else can the people do, like what other interests do they have. And so then it becomes very, very interesting. And that also helps differentiating, you know, some people more like clay modeling, the other ones more like 3D and stuff like that. So it's in a very, very underestimated or undervalued fact by the students to know these things that are not just about sketching.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, it's not solely reserved to students. I mean, you know, there are some people in the industry that just don't know how to build a portfolio that's going to really strike a chord, which is strange. You know, I've always found that a bit strange. Like, this is your career, this is what you do. And again, I don't want to sound overly negative, right? Because there are certain things that, you know, you're working in an industry, but you're not used to, you know, perhaps showcasing your work. But as a visual person, it's always kind of, as a side note, it's always been really interesting to me to find designers that can't take a photograph. It's like, how do you not know how, you know, you're working with how things are perceived and the look of something, you know, every day, you know, to me, that makes no sense. Anyway, sorry about that slight deviation.
That's all right. That's all right.
I think ultimately, in order, you're right in what you say. You know, it's portfolios ultimately, you know, are an ideas showcase. So to me, a strong portfolio, if you're going to choose to show something that is based on an existing brand, then be on brand. You know, obviously, no one wants to see something that is going to be able to be produced in a year's time. I always tell designers this. They want to see, they know what they're going to be doing for the next 5 years down the line. They don't want to see something that, you know, is current, but they're looking for long-term vision. You know, do you have the stamina to, because when they hire you, you know, you're going to be a junior designer for a little while working on wheels and whatever, you know, it's like in the future, are you still going to be able to generate ideas 5-10 years down the line? You know, that's what these hiring managers want to see. That's what these companies want to see. So, you know, another thing is, in terms of like creating a portfolio, you know, of course you want to show your ability. Of course you want to show that you're well-versed. Of course you want to show that you can, you know, do Photoshop or whatever, this, that, and the other. But at the same time, you should be on topic. That is my biggest issue, is seeing design, you know, portfolios that come across loaded with like exterior designs and product work. And then they're like, I want to be an interior designer. Well, where are your interior designs? that is, you know, something that I just, so it's important that if you're going after a certain position and a certain role to showcase just how good you are at that particular bit. Of course you can show, you know, a watch design if that's something that you've done. Of course, if you know you've done a couple of interior projects on intern or exterior projects on internship, throw that in. But it shouldn't be the priority. If your priority is finding an interior design job, then you need to be top notch with that interior proposal.
Exactly. And just to add to that, you know, I know it's a little bit of extra work, but if you're not sure what you want to do, do two portfolios. Right.
Yes.
You know, do one which is interior based, do one which is exterior based, and then, you know, send out both, but make sure that you show that, you know, they are different in that kind of sense. And I think I would definitely recommend more interior, because it's unfortunately still the case that there's, you know, not a lot of students, or like fewer students, way fewer students actually than exterior guys or exterior students are interested in interiors. And let me tell you one thing. If you want to have a job, or if you want to increase your chances of getting a job, do interiors.
Yes.
Yeah, because the guys that are just incredibly good on exteriors are very, very few, and they will take up the jobs, because, you know, from a project perspective, from our experience, you don't need a lot of exterior designers. Yeah, you can do a full exterior with, let's say, 3 designers if you need to. Yeah, so even if you go to big kind of, you know, let's say BMWs, Mercedes and stuff like that, they have hundreds of designers. They still do smaller cars, like, you know, cars with small teams,
yeah,
especially on exterior. Exactly. But like, you know, still, it's like per car, you don't need that many people in terms of the pure creative process. I'm not talking about the process of building a car, but the pure creative process of an exterior. And on the other hand, because of all, you know, the details that are becoming more and more important, the interior or even exterior details are becoming much, much, much more important in the whole process. So, you know, if you really want to make sure, you know, you really get into your passion, which is then transportation design, you know, have an idea what the market wants from you. You know, if you're super passionate about exteriors, but you can't keep up with the big guys, why don't you just do something else? Like, you know, the passion of staying within the industry is probably bigger than just the passion for exterior. So why not try something different? And one thing that you mentioned earlier with the photos, I wanted to bring up quickly, because one thing that we can very, very often see, and this is then, you know, very much hand in hand with the understanding of a clay model or even like a 3D model with Alias in particular, is perspective. Yeah. So we have a 3/4, you have the front view, the rear view, the side view, everything, you know, front, back, 3/4, whatever you want it to be. Make sure you learn perspectives. You know, and that's one of the hardest thing you can do, but it's really, really easy to have a car look nice from a front view, from a 3/4 front view and stuff like that. But make sure you exactly know what you wanted to show, and that it is consistent. We've spoken about Sasha Silipanov a few times, but he's a perfect example for that. He, you know, models pretty much his designs all by himself, and he then decides based on the 3D model most of the time, does this work or does it not work? you know, because it's a coherent picture of what he has in his mind. And I think this helps a lot. It helps a lot about the idea of perspective as well, and to make sure that the whole idea is working and not just the front or not just the rear or not just the side view, because in the end, the ideal point is, in terms of exterior, you want to do a full car, and in terms of interior, yeah, a dashboard is very nice, but you also think about, you know, the center console, about the seats and stuff like that as well. So It's always about a learning process, you know. Read books, like talk to people about their experiences, you know, like make sure that you're always open up to learn about the whole thing, and obviously keep on sketching, but always get feedback as well. Get feedback from not just your fellow students or your teachers and stuff like that that know you very, very well, you know, because on Behance and all these kind of things nowadays, get your feedback, even if it's negative. And negative feedback will help you as much as a positive one to get better. Yeah, don't be afraid of that. That's very, very important, I think. I don't want to rant or anything like that, but I, you know, always keep on going. That's like those kind of best people. Talent is the one thing, but if you're persistent, you know, the persistence of you really willing to go to the next level is will always be, you know, a very, very important point.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It's like some of these really, really talented guys are not extroverts. You know, they're not out there showcasing their work on things like Behance, for example, or on social media. I mean, actually, I've heard some design school that really dissuade designers from showing their work on social media because of the fear that their ideas may get poached by someone else. Now, you know, it's possible. Yes. I mean, anything's possible. But a lot of the time, you know, ultimately what people need to remember is the originality of ideas. Yeah. You know, no one wants something that, you know, is going to be, this one guy, senior level designer at a company, told me once that a designer came in, a potential, you know, junior designer wanting a job, and he showed him a flipped, so therefore inverted version of his own sketch. And that to me is just boggles the mind. It's like, how do you even, so you've got some guys that aren't very talented but have a lot of balls, or you've got other guys that are, you know, introverted and super talented whose work you'll never see. Yeah. There's a fine balance, but in terms of, you know, showcasing your work, yes, it is important to get feedback. If you know of some people that you can contact that are actually working designers that can give you some criticism, you know, people like ourselves that see portfolios very regularly, you know, we can give you some feedback and maybe critique and help you to build things. It's just a shame that some design schools, coming back to the original main topic of discussion, aren't really doing the legwork to give the designers that, you know, that information, you know, which really should be upfront. You know, I mean, it's not rocket science. You know, you're applying for a certain position. You're very good at this. Work on perfecting that, you know. Don't be a jack of all trades. Work on being a master of one. And, you know, if you can really, really showcase your ability to be an interior designer, of course, now is huge. Interior design is definitely, and has been for a number of years, gaining in importance. It's going to make you just more attractive, give you a leg up, and that's what you need as an aspiring designer looking for your first job.
Exactly. And I think, to be very, very honest, we will probably do another episode in the future about this, because we want to have your feedback. You know, we want to have a little bit of your discussion point and stuff like that. So we will leave it with the design schools for now.
It's a topic I'm very passionate about. I've been about this for a long time. It's nice to kind of put it out there, but it does deserve a bit more of a deep dive, I think. But it's definitely important in any medium to get feedback. So by all means, you know, let us know your thoughts. You know, if you're a professional designer working in the industry, what tips would you have for a young aspiring designer? Certainly in cases of building up a portfolio to showcase their work. And also, if, you know, you're a professor at a design school, shoot us a line, you know, let us know what's happening. What are some of the things and the hindrances, or some of the speed bumps perhaps that you're encountering from an educational perspective, you know, when you are out there trying to teach young designers into getting their dream job.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we will obviously have everything on, you know, online. We will have, you know, we will feature the podcast, of course, on Instagram and social media and stuff like that. So please do contact us either on direct message on Instagram, LinkedIn, I think Twitter as well as possible. So email, of course, is no problem. So wherever you listen to this, if it's on iTunes, if it's on Spotify, or if it's on any kind of RSS feed or any kind of other app that you're using, you know, reach out to us on Instagram. For, you know, at Concept Houses, where pretty much, you know, we as a company are being trading, you can reach us at Form Trends pretty much on every other channel as well. And please, yeah, let us know what do you think, because it is a controversial topic and I think it's always an ever evolving one. And we would very, very much looking into, you know, or we would be happy to have feedback from all of you guys. If you're a student, if you're a teacher, if you're, you know, as you know, a more seasoned kind of designer, someone that just recently graduated and has got his first job and stuff like that. So we are really, really looking forward into hearing from you about this. And we have one little announcement. We just obviously, well, actually two little announcements, I have to say. So when you listen to this, this will be then on Friday, the 19th of October when this comes out. We want to make sure that, you know, check out our charity auction for the lovely German charity called Herzenswünsche EV, which are pretty much doing like, you know, a Make-A-Wish Foundation pretty much. We have a couple of pictures and posters of the Genesis Essentia, which have been signed by Sasha Salipanov and his whole team. It's all for a good cause. So, you know, do bid on that one. It, you know, goes to the kids. So that's always really, really good with that one. And also, we will be, or actually, you know, at that point in time when you listen to this, we already have, we'll record a special edition of the Gestalten podcast, which will be about VR, virtual reality within the design departments. So, you know, how it is used, why it is used, what are the pros, what are the cons and stuff like that. And we will be having Quirin Friedel, who is actually running the visualization department at Byton here in Munich with us, to give us a little bit of an insight on this one. So some cool things coming up. It's probably going to take us about a week to get this all sorted out. Yep. But, you know, we...
Sorry, I'm missing out on that one.
Yeah, that's fine, Eric. Don't worry about it. Quirin's going to be here for, you know, in person. But, you know, let us know if you have more topics like that, because a lot of people came up to us and said, oh, you know, VR, can you talk about that? We was like, yeah, cool, let's do it. We have some other plans, you know, that we'll bring in.
Yeah, yeah, we'll have some more special guests on in the future, talk about different aspects
exactly.
of design as
but,
well.
But if you ever have any kind of wishes or, you know, any kind of topics that you want us to talk about desperately, we are always open for suggestions. Of course, we have a bunch of things that we want to talk about in the future anyways, but let us know, interact with us on the various media channels. And with that, my dear friend Eric, I would say... We're pretty much done, to be very honest.
I think so. Yeah, you covered pretty much everything. I mean, you know, you guys know how to get in touch with us. By all means, don't be shy. Reach out, drop us a line on various accounts and profiles. And just, yeah, let us know if you guys are interested in us covering something else or different topics that you may want to listen to and hear about. You know, we're always open to suggestions. And yeah, looking forward to this VR special that Martin is going to be doing. And yeah, I guess that's about it. You know, we don't have anything else to add. So
nope, just one more thing before we forget it. Do follow us on Instagram in particular for, you know, at Concept House, because you will see the latest jobs that we have over there as well. So we still have a bunch of things in the pipeline for especially interior guys. We have even a couple of chief design positions for exterior and interior. So exciting, exciting. So follow us there and on LinkedIn as well for, you know, all this kind of new stuff, because, you know, maybe there might even be something for you young listeners out there that, you know, that are students and are graduating quite soon. Who knows?
Mm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
But yeah, so
on that note,
we're done. On that note, we're done for the
day.
Thanks
again for joining us, guys, and we will see
thanks
you
a lot.
On the next one.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.